it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome back to the Weekend Water Cooler. We're here this week talking once again, thank goodness, with Sharon Hirsch, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, or as I like to call her, the Chief Executive Optimist of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. Sharon, welcome back to the Water Cooler, having it since you have not budged one inch from our recording our program from last week, but it's been a week for our listeners, and they've had time to do their meditation.
That's right.
And to use their Headspace app. Is that the app, Headspace?
That's right.
I cannot wait to try that. I'm going to have to tell our listeners, you know, if I miss next week's show, you'll know that I just slept through it.
You won't sleep through it. You'll be refocused.
I'll be refocused.
You'll be focused.
I'll just be focused on something else.
Yes.
I'll be so much sharper.
Yes.
Well, that won't be too difficult because, you know, the sharper knives remain in the drawer.
The sharp wit.
Okay. Well, so I'm lost about you just distracted me with this great story. So let's take the second part first.
Okay.
And tell me about this wonderful person who's going to do this wonderful thing, I guess, in a kayak.
Yeah, we have two amazing board members, Zeke Bridges and Thomas Moore, who said that they wanted to raise awareness about our cause this year in April, and they are going to paddle down the Neuse River.
They're going to paddle down the river. They're going down the river.
They are, and they're doing it over a couple of days. They're going from Kinston to New Bern, and we'll be stopping along the way and raising awareness in eastern North Carolina in particular. But they are, one's taking a kayak, and the other one is on a paddleboard. And we are so excited about this.
That's going to be kind of tough on a paddleboard. That's a long distance for a paddleboard, isn't it?
It is. That's why it's going to take, I believe, 3 days. And we're excited about it. Thomas is a lobbyist over at the General Assembly.
And a wonderful one.
And a wonderful advocate,
yes,
for kids.
He is.
And Zeke is an administrative dean over at the Campbell Law School, and they're really galvanizing the legal community in North Carolina to support them in this and send them down the river to raise awareness about upstream investments in kids and families.
That's exactly right. And by the way, speaking of and you know, I was telling you that my download of puns about upstream just has started firing on all cylinders since you told me about this. Speaking of upstream investments, I have not thought to ask you before now. Holy mackerel, what a gigantic investment from Blue Cross Blue Shield in your organization. Please talk about that. Take all the time you need. It's an hour show.
We are so excited. The Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina is investing $1 million.
$1 million. Like Dr. Evil, but no evil.
We still feel like $1 million over at Prevent Child Abuse. We are planning to invest that funding in raising awareness about adverse childhood experiences and how you can prevent them.
Right.
We're ever so grateful to Blue Cross Blue Shield. They've got some new leadership, and their new CEO is a pediatrician. He still actually practices on the weekends.
Good grief.
Which is an amazing,
amazing thing. A doctor
who
works on the weekends?
Yes.
How did this happen?
Well, I think he's got a commitment to his profession, and what they're doing at Blue Cross is pretty extraordinary. They are investing in 4 strategic areas with the tax savings that they're receiving as a result of the new federal tax law.
Okay.
They're just doing this for a year.
Okay.
Their rates had already been set for the year, and they've got a really strong commitment next year to use this tax refund to reduce rates, which is also a really important concrete support, as we mentioned earlier.
Right.
But they are investing in 4 strategic areas, improving access to health care,
mm-hmm.
opioid prevention, social determinants of health, and early childhood development.
Okay. Tell me what that third one is.
Social determinants of health.
Not what I've heard before. Is that like your zip code shouldn't determine how long you live?
That's part of it. It's that things happen to you in social situations. Social issues, things like, so for example, we are a recipient of funding in their early childhood development
mm-hmm.
bucket of investments. Interact, one of our sister agencies in Raleigh that focuses, is a domestic violence shelter and offers services to women,
mm-hmm.
they've received the social determinants of health.
Okay.
award. They've received $2 million, and we're so excited for them. They're going to create a family justice center.
That's fantastic.
TROSA over in Durham also received a gift, and they're going to expand their services into Guilford County, which is really fantastic. And then the Physicians Assistance Program at UNC Chapel Hill has also received an award. So we're excited about the $1 million because we think it's going to help us really get this message out here in North Carolina in a much deeper, richer, and more impactful way than we ever could have done without it.
Right.
But we also are really excited for all of our partners because they didn't give away $40 million when they made this award to us. There's still funding that will be distributed to other agencies in those four buckets.
Right.
So we're excited for our partners. We also know that when you prevent opioid addiction, you're also having an impact on child abuse and neglect.
Yeah, a lot of other things just don't happen because of that. Right.
There's a real strong correlation, surprise, surprise, between domestic violence and child abuse and neglect.
Right.
To be able to have a family justice center in our largest county is a really big deal.
Right.
And it's going to be wonderful for kids and families and their moms.
Right, right.
We're super excited about where else these investments might be. We think it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a lot of agencies that can really help them get a lot done.
It's such a smart use for the money. I mean, you know, you're right. They do if they have to file their rates so far in advance that when they found out about this, there was nothing they could do about that. And this just helps so many things so smartly.
It's a game changer for us.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a game changer for social determinants of health and early childhood investments and the opioid investment.
This is a good kind of spiral that goes in the good direction.
That's exactly right. These are really good upstream investments.
And also, you know, Thomas he's going to be in the kayak, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He'll be on the paddleboard.
On the paddleboard, actually. That's right. Okay. Well, you're going to take 1,000 pictures of this, right?
Absolutely.
We have to see those pictures. Those are going to be all over social media.
Thomas has actually done a fabulous job. They've gone on a test run, and he's taken his GoPro with him, and we've got great video footage.
Cut it out. I can't wait to see that. That is so fantastic.
It's going
to
be great.
Well, Thomas, good for you, man. You're the coolest guy. He really
Zeke is the coolest guy.
Well, Zeke
They're
is
great.
Too. Zeke is too. But come on, that paddleboard—that's a job. That sounds. I hope the water's not too cold. Jeez.
We hope there are no alligators or anything.
No,
there.
There's not that many. There's not that many gators. The only time I've seen a gator was in a river in North Carolina. You know where I've seen gators is at the USS Wilmington.
In Wilmington,
the USS North Carolina.
Yes.
And down there in the, I think it's the Cape Fear River, right?
Yeah, that was an original thought, but we decided against the Cape Fear. It's a little more dangerous to go down the Cape Fear than it is the Noose.
Yeah, and besides, going down a river named Fear seems like the wrong approach.
I don't know.
sorry for my, you know, my literary references, but going down a river, sending your lawyer down a river named Fear, that could be a good movie, though. It could be.
It could be. But we're really excited about what they're going to do and the awareness it'll bring to our cause.
Well, I love that they're so creative about it because, I mean, that's almost nutty. You don't think of lawyers as being nutty. Well, I do because my dad's a lawyer. But, you know, I don't think of lawyers being, you know, that creative. No offense, lawyers.
I think it's a great adventure.
It's absolutely sounds utterly fantastic. And of course, when he comes back to your next meeting or whatever, and he has, you know, little bites on his ankles and stuff, and, you know, little small injuries that he suffered, he'll come in and everybody will fuss over him. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You'll have to fuss over him.
We will, of course.
And you'll be nurturing and caring because he's a person and he deserves that.
Absolutely.
Even though he is a lawyer. So
he's one of the best lawyers.
Yes. He's one of the best lawyers. And, you know, even sharks deserve love. Right? That's what we're saying. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So he's a good shark. Yeah. So there are sharks and he's a good shark and we wish him all the best. I cannot wait to hear how this turns out. I'm sorry, remind me again he's doing this in April.
Yes.
Is he going to go right from that to the fun run?
It's actually the fun run and then a week later.
And then it's a week later. So first he runs and then he paddles and then, you know, it sounds like an Olympic event.
We may need somebody to ride a bike across North Carolina.
Yeah, it might be a bike. You need a bike, and then maybe somebody on skis, and and somebody can climb up a rock and end up at Blowing Rock. You know, that
we can keep it going.
Yeah, you can. You can. And all of these should be lawyers. All of these should be personal injury lawyers, actually, so that we know, you know, we don't have to worry about that. Okay, well, we're gonna come back and talk a little bit more about this. This is just so much. I'm just getting this picture now of him on that paddleboard.
It's gonna be great.
That's gonna be part of my meditation for the rest of the day. I think that's where that's going. Okay, well, we're gonna be back to talk some more with Sharon Hirsch, who is the CEO of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back talking with Sharon Hirsch, CEO of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, a wonderful organization. Please, please, please visit their website, preventchildabusenc.org. And while you're there, do the right thing and hit the donate button and help these nice folks out with the good work that they do all over our state, as well as here in the Triangle. Sharon, we were talking earlier about an absolutely amazing story earlier this year, not long ago this year, which was all of this rampant sexual abuse of children who were athletes in the Olympic. These Olympic athletes, gymnasts, but not just gymnasts, and other Olympic athletes, girls and not only girls. And it appeared, I think for many of us, like this went on and on and on, and just nobody caught it. Why did this happen?
Well, there are a lot of reasons why it happens, but it's also a pattern. We've seen the same thing at Penn State.
Right.
We saw the same thing in the Catholic Church.
Right.
And too often, we protect institutions mm-hmm. before we protect children.
Yeah.
People who have power in our society tend to be these big institutions that mm-hmm. people revere. And it's hard for folks to imagine that they could do wrong.
Yeah.
I mean,
on that scale,
on that
especially.
Scale, yeah. The Catholic Church, people trust their priest. They're an incredibly powerful person in that community. At Penn State, it wasn't imaginable that anyone on Joe Paterno's staff could have done anything wrong.
Certainly not that he knew about it.
Right. And I think that's probably what happened with USA Gymnastics. But as a result of that, we worked very hard to make sure that we could educate folks about how do you recognize and respond to child maltreatment when it occurs.
Right.
So we initiated a campaign back in February to ask parents, do you know if your teacher, if your child's coach, if their Girl Scout or Boy Scout leader, their youth group leader, do you know if they've even been trained in how to recognize and respond to child maltreatment? Do you know if they know how to make a report to DSS or to the Division of Child Development? Do you know the difference between where you would make a report?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a course that we have made available online. It's funded by the Division of Social Services mm-hmm. that is called Recognizing and Responding to Child Maltreatment. You can find it on our website.
Right.
And you can take it anytime, 24/7. It takes about 2 hours. And when you're done, you take a quiz to see if you can pass.
Yeah.
If you get a score of 80 or higher, you'll get a certificate of completion.
Mm-hmm.
There are some schools that have asked all of their staff to take the course.
Right.
Unfortunately, in North Carolina, it's not mandatory. It's something that's voluntary. In our state system, as a lot of our human services and education systems are in North Carolina, they're very decentralized.
Yeah.
Decisions made at the local level, which has a lot of benefit. But in this case, there's no requirement for any school personnel to take the course. So we're really asking everybody who's listening today, if you're a parent, go to your school and ask your principal, have your teachers, your counselors, have all the staff that touch kids in any way in the course of a day, have they taken the course? It only takes 2 hours.
Right.
And it's a tremendous way to both raise awareness and then get them thinking about what happens in school and how can they be fostering a more trauma-informed school environment as well.
And for that matter, I mean, teachers just as colleagues, then, mm-hmm. if they all have that common training, then if they feel like they're seeing something that they're concerned about, then they can go to a colleague and they can say, do you think that this is like that part in the training where they talked about, you know, stress levels, or this kid seems like he's pulling his hair out. Is that a thing? I mean, you know, or whatever the issue
or
is
all
that
of
they
a sudden
notice.
Some Joey is acting out and is fighting.
Is that happening in your class too? Because he's behaving this way in mine, and even in elementary school, sometimes kids change blocks and have different teachers during the day. So that can be a basis for teachers to compare notes against the training measures and say, you know, I don't know, are you seeing that, or is this just that kid he sits next to in my class?
And coaches are another great example. I mean, in this area, so many kids are playing soccer. So many kids are playing basketball, baseball.
Right.
And we drop our kids off at practice.
Right.
Do we know?
And by the way, what do you know about the coach?
Right. Do you know if there's been a background check done before they were hired? Do you know if they're aware of this? Are there always two adults present at all times?
Right.
I mean, that's a basic policy that we think every
It seems obvious.
But things like in congregations, often you'll have a Sunday school teacher who's teaching by themselves, or a youth group leader that doesn't have any other volunteers and it's one adult. And you should always have two adults in the room when you're working with kids to protect the kids, but to protect the other adult too.
Exactly.
From a false allegation.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And you know, either of those things can happen. But also, you know, that if there's an accident, you know, a kid climbs up on a chair and is told get down from there and whatever, but then falls instead, that, you know, everybody's got some version of what they saw and how they experienced that situation. So that protects everybody involved, and that's just the best way to do it. So, you know, I think that parents probably need to feel empowered to just, you know, don't worry about being rude.
That's right.
that's last thing you need to worry about. And if anybody wants to have a problem with you because you're asking that question,
then you need to be asking yourself some other questions.
That should provoke some other questions. I think I told you before we were starting that that when my kids were little and they wanted to go play at a friend's house, I didn't have any reluctance, really, about asking the parents if there was a gun in the house, not because that was a deal breaker for me. It was because I wanted to have the conversation. Do you have a gun? Is it secured? And this is something I want to know if my child is playing at your house without my being there. And I think anybody should feel empowered to do that. I also would say that if they had a problem with it, then the kids can come and play at my house. And, you know, we don't own a gun, but, you know, there are still things where kids can get hurt. Don't get me wrong about this. But this is just the kind of thing that as parents and really as citizens, you know, these are just basic things that we're perfectly entitled to ask. And if you do it in a respectful way, nobody should be offended by questions like that, I shouldn't think.
Absolutely not. And when you're asking about your kid, you know that there are lots of other children who are interacting with that same adult. So it's really about all of them. It's about
it really
all of our
is.
Kids.
Right. And I would ask, by the way, even if it was like a birthday party, you know, because, you know, when there's a lot of people around, I know this growing up with a swimming pool in my yard. When there's a lot of people around, that can be the time when it's oddly the most dangerous because everybody thinks that everybody else is paying attention and they're not. So there are hazards like this that kids are in and around, and we have a lot to do with making those things safe situations for them. So the Olympic case, do you know how that was first discovered? Was there a single case, or was there a group of athletes who filed complaints simultaneously? Do you know?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't. It's like
I can't remember.
It's like that story just exploded on the scene. There were many, many, many athletes, right? And I certainly hope that they're getting the support and help that they need now. It was an amazing thing to see that the Olympics began with, I think, the president of the International Olympic Committee at the opening ceremonies apologizing for that. That was
powerful.
Really amazing stuff. What it took to make that happen was a lot. So,
it's speaking truth to power.
Speaking truth to power, and that was a lot of power in the world looking. That's for sure. What a stage to make such a statement too. That was epic right there. Well, speaking of epic, our listeners really need to hear some epic words from our advertisers, and so we're going to let them hear those words, and then we're going to be back with more with Sharon Hirsch, CEO of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Sharon Hirsch of Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. Sharon, here's what we're going to do. We're going to follow the money. We're going to talk about money because, as we know, in this game of making the world a better place for our children, which is the work that you and I have done every day for the last, we don't want to talk about it, how many years, this work is about taking a dollar today and turning it into $10 in some years, right?
That's right.
I mean, it's kind of like buying savings bonds, and you want your kids to think long term. You want to give them an allowance, and you want them to say, you know, if I give you a dollar and you, you know, save 5 cents out of your dollar of your allowance, you're going to be glad you did that. But you're not going to be glad in 5 minutes. You're going to be glad, you know, in 5 years when you've done this every time you got your allowance, and you know it's long term savings, and we want you to think about the future and think about something bigger than the ice cream that you want to go buy right now. So those kids all grow up, though, and somehow get to work in various systems, political and otherwise, and otherwise, you know, business, bottom line systems, where they're watching the bottom line and they're just saying, you know, how can I save a buck today? And we're also in the same area, reactive. You know, we will put in a metal detector much faster than we will hire an extra school nurse for some reason. Now, I realize that you buy the metal detector once and then you have it and that's it. But I also realize that that's reacting to a problem that's really late in the process. That is downstream, as you say. So how do we even begin to attack these problems by making investments further upstream that just obviously, to me it's obvious, to you it's obvious. They bring tremendous results if you can inject the money at the right point upstream. Am I right about this?
Of course you're right about this. But we know, I think that the place you start is helping people understand what we're paying for now and getting really lousy results with.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So we know in North Carolina, based on a 2012 study, which is now, you know, 6 years old, that North Carolina is spending every year in excess of $2 billion with a B. With downstream consequences, the negative results. We're spending that money in our criminal justice system because more people are going to jail. We've got...
Although it remains overwhelmed,
yes,
that system.
Yes. So that would be another reason to go upstream and prevent that from happening.
Good
because
point.
Prevention is prevention.
Uh-huh.
We're spending too much money in our social services system. Mm-hmm. We're spending too much money on remedial education and trying to fix all kinds of things in that educational system that are really about supporting and strengthening kids and families.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're spending way too much money in our healthcare system. As we've already talked about over the course of our two interviews, we know what happens in early childhood impacts physical and mental health for your lifetime.
Right.
And then it results in lost worker productivity in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who are sicker, who are missing work more often, who may be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the productivity isn't where it could be.
Right.
So we're spending $2 billion every single year in North Carolina on getting really crappy outcomes.
Right.
And we're only spending about $2 million in state dollars.
That's with an M.
With an M to prevent it. There are there used to be an allocation to something called the North Carolina Children's Trust Fund, a state allocation. And that funding was used exclusively to fund prevention programs.
Right.
During the recession, back around 2008, that funding stopped being allocated. And the only money that goes into that fund right now are sales of the Kids First license plate, which is a great thing for anyone to do to drive prevention, and
I see what you did there with the wordplay. Yeah,
And the marriage license fee, a portion of that goes into the Children's Trust Fund. Other than that, there's no state dollar allocated for prevention programming.
Oh, my goodness.
We're spending federal dollars that are allocated to North Carolina on some prevention programming, but not big state dollars that are exclusively dedicated to preventing abuse and neglect.
Right.
And so as we're going across the state and talking about this, we're fostering conversations. We're showing the film Resilience. Mm-hmm. We're getting folks educated about the Adverse Childhood Experience Study. And we're saying, what's your plan? We know that when we, as Benjamin Franklin told us years ago, that when you fail to plan, you're planning to fail.
Yes.
We are failing our children.
Right.
So we're actually challenging folks across the state, particularly at the local level, because that's where the real innovation happens in North Carolina.
Right. It's true.
We're asking county commissions in particular, because they are the funders of social services, public health, education.
Yeah, at the local level, right.
What percentage of your budget are you spending downstream and getting bad outcomes? And what are your goals for your community? And how could you shift that and spend more upstream and get better results? A lot of our counties have goals around safety and stability for families and good health outcomes.
Right.
But the funding is being spent on the downstream consequences.
And graduation rates.
That's right.
And
all of those things. Right. If we were spending more to support and strengthen families, make sure kids are fed before they get to school, that their parents have the kind of support they need so that they've got a good meal in the morning, they've got the clothes that they need to wear, they've got the strong social support in the afternoon to get their homework done.
Mm-hmm.
We were investing in those things. Imagine the kind of prosperity that would be possible for North Carolina, for every family.
Right, right. Well, you know, this is I hate to use this term, but this is kind of the choke point is at the county level, because as you say, this is where all these things come together. Mm-hmm. And really, that's where the accountability is too, which is with boards of education and with the county commissioners. And as you say, when they're the ones that are right there and can relate directly to the day-to-day, and they have folks working for them who are just right in the viscera all the time, I think that that's a really good approach. So when parents are looking to become advocates, and I say this not so much as a matter of political activism. There is a lot of that going on this year, to great success, and we're all happy about that. Well, most of us are happy about that. But this isn't really even when I think of political ideas, I think of you have a liberal approach, I have a more conservative approach, and that's the political spectrum. But in this, the partisanship tends to disappear, really, because, you know, nobody's on the hurting children side of the argument.
That's exactly right.
People may differ a little bit about, but I don't see how they can on political fault lines about what's the best way to accomplish this. But frankly, it's very focusing for me to look at it through the lens of money, because that's how communities collectively express their values, is through their budgets.
Absolutely.
And so, I saw a wonderful piece that was written not very long ago. I'm pretty sure you saw this too, where someone had written a great piece about, you know, why, if we're going to have a state-of-the-art jail in downtown Durham, if that's one of the signature pieces of architecture in downtown Durham, whatever you think of it, why aren't we bringing social services to the people who are there so that when they leave that little, Hilton, that they leave and don't come back? They don't want to come back. We don't want them to come back.
Yeah, restorative justice.
And most of them are there without having been convicted of anything.
Well, one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to help communities develop a child abuse prevention plan, something that's never been required in North Carolina. There's no requirement at the local level for any kinds of planning around child welfare, which is really quite shocking. But as we've started to have these conversations and shown the film Resilience and fostered a conversation and brought folks together, folks get pretty energized. about this.
Right.
And so they're so Cumberland County down in Fayetteville is our first county to do this. Their county commissioners unanimously approved a plan that has a big audacious goal of reducing child maltreatment by 90% by 2030.
I love it.
Which I just, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
They have brought folks from the faith community, law enforcement, elected officials, public health, social services, the child advocacy community, all together to develop this plan. And they're starting
each from their own perspective.
From their own,
what can we do? What can we bring to the table?
Yeah, they started by doing a survey of what they're already doing, and they've categorized it by the protective factors.
Right.
We went in and we trained them on the protective factors framework, and then they developed a plan to improve each of those five factors that we talked about earlier: social and emotional competence of kids, parent knowledge of child development and parenting, social connections, resilience, and concrete supports.
Right.
Now they're working on, so how do we bring this plan to action?
Right.
And so they're talking about what investments they're going to make locally.
Right.
So they can look at a whole series of things. You just talked about the jail.
Right.
We have a fabulous story out of one of the counties that has implemented our Circle of Parents program, which is an evidence-informed parent support program, where they targeted the moms that were coming into their county jail, who they determined were their frequent flyers. And those moms became part of a Circle of Parents group as a result of them focusing on the needs of their kids and understanding the importance of stability, of their being there for them.
Right.
None of those moms have been rearrested.
Okay. Results.
Results. It's amazing. Now, that's an anecdotal story. I can't tell you what those results look like statewide, but that's the kind of thing that can happen when you invest in helping parents understand the impact that they have. Making investments, the counties are thinking about, so which evidence-based parenting program can we bring here, and how do we pay for it?
Right.
There are lots of really good options in North Carolina.
Right. Instead of building another jail.
Yes. Nurse Family Partnership is an incredible home visiting program that targets at-risk moms prenatally and starts with bringing a nurse to them and talking about taking good care of them, their own health, so that they are able to have a healthy birth, and works with them through the age of three.
Right.
Those, you know, 0 to 3.
Because you need it.
We need it. And that's when your brain, when children's brains are developing the most. The most synapses start connecting then.
Right.
It takes 25 years for brains to fully develop and all the synapses to connect.
All of my relatives say much longer, actually. But yeah.
My personal experience is 25, pretty magical.
Yeah.
But that's a really critical time. In Durham, we have Durham Connects. It's a universal home visiting program. Every new mom that has a baby born at Duke Hospital or Duke Regional gets one of those visits and gets information about child development. We have the Incredible Years program that really focuses on helping parents. Triple P is a program that's the positive parenting program that is available universally to any parent, any income level, any age level. Mm-hmm. There are even programs available for parents of children with disabilities and teenagers. And you can just Google Triple P here in North Carolina, and you will be taken to North Carolina's Triple P page. And if you don't want to go to a class or see—
You can get all of that online.
You can get you can take the courses online for free.
For free. F-R-E-E.
Triple P. Triple P. Google it. It's a fabulous resource. We want all parents to know that it's okay to take a parenting class. That would be extraordinary.
Yeah, it's not a, it's no kind of, in fact, I may go look at that now because I've found that in becoming a grandparent, I've learned a surprising amount of stuff about childhood development that I either didn't know or forgot, but there's a lot of stuff that's been developed since I had my first child. Oh my goodness! I don't want to say how many years ago.
All the time, I would have given anything for Triple P when my kids were little.
This stuff is so great.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
When I first
moved, online communities and all that stuff too. But
when I first moved to North Carolina, my son was 18 months old.
Yeah.
And about 18 months after that, I had my daughter.
Yeah.
And you know, you move to a new place,
you don't know anybody,
community, you don't have anything.
Right, you have to build it yourself.
And it takes time.
It's hard. Yeah.
I would have given anything for...
I was ahead of you, but had the same thing. Yeah.
Normalizing that there needs to be a place that parents can go.
Well, I'll tell you one place parents can go. They can go to the Weekend Water Cooler and listen to all this great advice from Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with our closing moments with Sharon. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back. We have just a few minutes left with Sharon Hirsch. This has gone by very quickly. So happy to have you with us, Sharon, with Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. And, you know, we were talking about having babies and how stressful it is when you have a baby. When I had my first child, I had just been in North Carolina for a couple of years. I had no family here. I had really only my husband's friends at work, our mutual friends, and it was really hard. I mean, I don't think we went out and left him with a babysitter until he was almost a year old. And that was very tough. And my son and daughter-in-law, by contrast, have her parents and, of course, my husband and myself. We all live within a few miles of each other. See each other all the time. They were at my house last night.
That baby is so lucky.
That baby is either so lucky or totally cursed. We'll see.
So lucky.
We'll see. So lucky. Okay, we'll stick with so lucky. You know, it's a good thing it doesn't totally leave a mark every time somebody kisses that kid on the head, because it would really be something. He's only got a tiny bit of hair coming in, so it would just be all kisses all over the place. But he's a long-awaited, much-wanted grandchild. And largely because of that, yes, he is so lucky. His parents are desperately in love with him, and we're in love with them for having him, and so on and so on. They went to a circle class that they did as a childbirth preparation tack, and they did that. And that group continues meeting even though everybody's had their babies. So some folks were at various stages of having children in that group. And some were having their second and third children, and some were first-timers like Brian and Jamie. And they keep meeting, except now they're, you know, now they meet at the park if it's a nice day, or I think it was last month or the month before that they were all at Brian and Jamie's house, and it was quite a zoo. All these little infants and a couple of older kids and everything. And Jamie was very, very proud of herself because they all left and she wasn't completely wiped out. She said, you know, that was actually kind of fun.
That's great.
But, you know, this is a great thing. I think that when people think of taking a parenting class, they feel like it's an area where they should intuitively know how to be great parents. And you know what? Nobody knows how to do that.
Nobody does. And what's really amazing in our society is that it really is the norm to take a childbirth class.
Right, right.
We're also afraid of the pain that folks are willing
exactly.
to...
Exactly. I used to be a childbirth educator.
There you go.
Yes.
But, you know, anytime I speak to groups, I always ask... When you had your baby, did you take a childbirth class? And everybody raises their hands.
Of course I did. I want to be a good parent.
But they don't teach you anything about parenting in a childbirth class. They talk to you about breathing and relaxing, and they might they might teach you how to change a diaper.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
That was my experience 25 years ago was
right.
They didn't even teach us how to change diapers. but the brain science, what we know now about brain science is that it takes 25 years, like I said, for the brain to fully develop. And childbirth, I don't know your experience, Jean, but mine was that neither one of my labors lasted more than 10 hours. Most, you would say, but 24
yeah,
tops.
I think I topped out really at about, you know, somewhere between 6 and 10, yeah.
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 So you're taking all those childbirth classes, but it takes 25 years for these brains to develop. We think
why
that
not invest up front in a class
in parenting education?
Yeah. Right.
We need to make it okay to sign up for a parenting class and to be something that everybody does. That it's not something just for families that are at risk.
Right.
We're all at risk. The ACEs study shows us that we're all at risk.
Yes, absolutely right.
And
absolutely
It's hard, and we need to ask for help. This does not come intuitively.
It really doesn't. Even people who you know who are great parents, And you and I know many people who are absolutely, including us, doggone it, who are wonderful parents.
Who still
adore
mistakes.
Their children. And still, I could sit here and just torment this audience with another 2 hours of stuff that I did when my kids were five that I thought, oh, I should never
or
have done that.
Or losing your temper and yelling at your children. We've
man.
All done it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, because children are born to human beings, it turns out, and this is why, you know, we all need to reach out to each other and get through it together. And you know, I'm so glad for the good folks of North Carolina that we have Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina and its chief executive optimist to get us through this process, because believe me, you're saving lives every day, especially apparently the lives of your staff who you have come in and meditate before they start your staff meetings, it sounds like.
It's important work. We want to make sure that they're centered and focused.
That's right. We don't want them looking at their phones and being distracted and thinking about whatever some nut job is thinking on social media. No. None of that. So Sharon Hirsch, thank you so much for joining us at the Water Cooler.
Thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to share with your listeners all the things they can do to support families.
Action, action, action. That's what we're all about at the Water Cooler. Action. Okay. So everybody get out there and make it a good day and prevent child abuse all throughout the month of April and the rest of the year just for fun, right?
That's right.
All right. Thanks a lot. Everybody have a good weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.